I'll try to keep it short, but it will take some time, inshallah. Bear with me. Those of you who might have not been there some nights, and there's some potholes and there's some gaps. Inshallah, tonight we're going to try to iron it all out so that we can get the message that we're trying to get across, inshallah. Brothers and sisters, we started out like this the first night, that the love of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein is a very sacred love. It's a love that's not only pure, but is purifying. The same way the Quran talks about a certain drink, a certain wine in Yawm al-Qiyamah, in Jannah, the paradise, where this wine is not only pure. In this life, if wine pours on you, spills on you, you have to wash it off. You have to make it tahir. This wine, not only is it pure and what does not make things najis, but rather it makes things pure. Those who drink this wine, it purifies them as they drink it. They get closer to Allah. The love of Imam Hussein is same thing, like something like that. It's a purifying love. But it was said that night that for this love to be purifying, or to be at its optimal level of purification of our souls, there has to be knowledge next to it. And of course, other things as well have to be next to it. One of those things that has to be next to this love is an understanding and knowledge of why it's there. Or else love, everyone has love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Just tonight, some brothers were discussing with me that they say that some of these people who fast on Ashura, they're doing it because they're doing it out of being happy that of what happened to Imam Hussein and celebrating what happened to Imam Hussein. But, brothers and sisters, today you won't really find that many people who will fast for this reason. Everyone loves Imam Hussein. From the most extreme of the extremist mentalities and ideologies to the more moderate ones, everyone loves Imam Hussein now. Some of the most staunch enemies of the Shia school, you can find their videos online. 1.5 hours, he's relating what? He's relating the story of Ashura. You watch this person that you know, he would give a fatwa to kill the Shia. When you watch him, tears might come to your eyes, the way he's relating the story. Love of Imam Hussein is good, but if you want maximum results, there are more conditions to this love. One of them is the understanding of why this all happened. What did Imam Hussein do? Was it just a bunch of bad guys who stood up and Imam Hussein said, I'm going to fight them? That's a very minimal approach to Ashura and understanding Ashura. No, no. There's a lot more to it than that. Love is not hard. It's not hard to love Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So the point that we were trying to make over these nights was to educate our brothers and sisters, especially the younger ones, as to what happened, what went wrong even. Without really getting into the other schools of thought and how they explain Ashura, because they have their own explanations. There are different groups of people. Some will go up to Yazid, alayhi al-na'na, and they will stop at Yazid and they will say, no, we can't say anything bad about Yazid. But at the same time, he won't say he did good things either. There are some who will go and stop at Muawiyah. They will say, no, Yazid was a tyrant, but Muawiyah was not. He didn't have problems. There are some that will stop at Uthman and the other two before him. And they will question Muawiyah even. We said these people are less. As you get closer to the first Khalifa, they become less. Those who are critical and question the ones who caused Ashura to happen. We said that we want our youth not to be struggling when it comes to understanding why Ashura happened. Falling into one of these categories. No, 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 no. Ashura, if explained correctly, if thought over correctly and enough, is like a string, brothers and sisters. I keep giving this example. Is like a string that if you pull that string, like a tasbih, if you pull that string, all of the beads that connect from Yazid all the way to the Prophet's demise, all of these beads will scatter. This is the Shia school, of course. We want to educate our youth so they understand the link between Ashura and after the Prophet's demise. All of these are connected. So that was the goal that we were pursuing over these nights. The whole story began with الشجرة الملعونة في القرآن, the cursed tree in the Quran. One whole night went for to understand that the Quran, when it talks about that cursed tree of the Quran, how it cannot be a tree that, you know, we see it all over the place. Normal trees, trunk and branch. What is meant by tree here cannot be an object like that. There is no tree in the Quran that the Quran is cursing. Allah is cursing this tree. Yes, we have the tree of Zakum, but that, if Allah is going to curse a tree that's in the hellfire, then He might as well curse the hellfire itself, might as well curse the angels in it. He created it Himself for Jahannam. So it can't be that, it can't be a tree that is cursed. It doesn't even make sense for Allah to curse a tree. Plus, no matter how much we look in the Quran, we don't find a tree that is cursed by Allah. So here Allama Tabatabai rahmatullah alayhi, he pushes and pushes in the direction that this tree is not those physical trees that we have out there. This is a family tree. This is a people. And he has his reasonings. We covered all of these. This is a people that resemble a tree. It has a trunk. It has branches. It has fruits. Just like family trees. Anyway, the Mufassireen at the top, of course, Allama Tabatabai, they show and prove that this Shajaratul Mal'una is what? Is that tree of Bani Umayyah. Why is it Mal'una? Very simple. It fought against Islam from the Prophet's time, before the conquest of Mecca, after that, all the way till Ashura, and after Ashura. Yes, it's Mal'un. And here it makes sense for a tree to be Mal'un now, because these are a people. All of the trouble that was caused for Imam Hussein to do what he did was because of Bani Umayyah. Then we draw lessons from what Imam Hussein did against Bani Umayyah. Once we understand why he did what he did, what caused him to leave Medina and Mecca, once we understand that, then we can find out what the secondary goals were. But the primary goal is one thing: getting rid of this tree of Bani Umayyah. And this tree, and this terminology of tree, brought us to this point where we started a journey of the tree of Bani Umayyah. How did this tree even grow to reach a point where Imam Hussein has to cut this tree down? And we compared this family and the growth and revival of Bani Umayyah to a tree. 7 or 8 steps we covered of how this tree even grew to begin with. How it got so strong that there was no way to cut it down except Ashura to happen. Once we understand how this tree grew, we will know that, oh, it's not just Yazid. It's not just Muawiyah. It goes all the way back to the beginning when the Muslim Ummah messed up. And once we understand this, then we understand why in Ziyarat of Ashura, we are sending La'an again and again on Bani Umayyah, Al-Ziyad, Al-Marwan, which is also part of Bani Umayyah. That's when we understand. We want our youth to understand these things. But we still haven't reached the end of our discussion in these nights. All of this while keeping respect, brothers and sisters, for the other schools. We have to learn to have dialogue. Some people, it's as if Allah has created them just to cause division and bloodshed and provoke the others. No, all of this while keeping as much respect as we can and trying to understand the other side. Trying to understand them. Why? So that they can also try to understand us a little bit. Inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So how did this tree grow? 7 steps for those of you who might want to write down. Step number one has nothing to do with Bani Umayyah. And as a matter of fact, I want us to pay attention to how many of these steps actually have to do with Bani Umayyah. With something that Bani Umayyah did. Inshallah. We're going to keep that in mind. Step number one for the tree of Bani Umayyah that now we're looking at. And tomorrow Imam Hussein alayhi salam wants to begin cutting this tree down. Where did this big, huge tree start from? Where did it come from? We're flashing back now. Step number one for this tree to come into existence was it has to have a seed to be planted first. The Prophet passes away. This is for the Shia, of course, now. The Prophet passes away. We believe that Ali ibn Abi Talib had to come after him. Right there, Saqifa takes place. In a place called Saqifa, they put Imam Ali aside, they choose someone else. And all the history that's there. Bani Umayyah, who is watching, sees this happening. They say, wow, look at the ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Already nothing's happened yet. Already they're dividing. Already they're going against what he wanted. What happens? This khilafah is taken. This power that later on we will see in the tree of Bani Umayyah. Right now, this power that was supposed to be with Bani Hashim, of course, Ali ibn Abi Talib, he has been taken away from him, now given to someone else. Not to Bani Umayyah though, but to someone else. That's the first step. The seed for this tree is planted. Anything that we see later came from this seed right here. We move on. Seeds, if they want to grow, you can't just put it on a rock. You can't just, you know, just dig a hole and just throw it in there. You have to till the ground. You have to get that ground ready, the soil ready, all of that. Tilled it, let the sun shine on that soil a little bit so that it gives its fruit. What was the environment that this seed was planted in? We said that right upon taking over, the hadith said that Aisha says that her father one night wasn't feeling too well. He was thinking about things. He had anxiety. In the morning, what happened, father? He said, I had 500 hadiths from the Prophet. And I was afraid that if these hadiths go out and the people hear these hadiths, they will misinterpret them and the responsibility will be on my shoulders. So I burned all of them. And so it happens that they prohibit the recording of a hadith of the Prophet. You could say that maybe 20%, 30%, 50% of them were about Ahlul Bayt. For 100, almost 100 years, these people are not allowed to say Qala Rasulullah, Sami'tu Rasulullah, Kana ya Rasulullah yaf'al kada. I heard the Prophet say this. The Prophet said that. The Prophet used to act like this. He used to do it like that. All of these things, none of that. Prohibited. Why? Because we fear. Now these are the ones who are in power. We fear that the Prophet's sayings will be mixed up with the Quran. We fear that the religion of the Prophet will go down the drain just like other religions. They made the same mistake. They added things. Their religions were destroyed. We're afraid that our religion will also be destroyed if we relate and transmit and record not only the hadiths of the Prophet that he said, but just in general the sunnah of the Prophet. Anything that has to do with the Prophet. Sunnah is more general than hadith. Everything is prohibited for 100 years. Think about it, brothers and sisters. Think about how if someone who has ill intentions takes power, can capitalize on this situation and make up as many hadiths as he likes regarding himself, regarding those before him, to justify his position and his doings. This was step number two. That during Abu Bakr's time, and even more during Umar's time, prohibition of hadith finished. No one talk about, only Quran. And do we have anything in the Quran that talks about directly Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam? Of course not. Allah's not going to mention Imam Ali in the Quran, or else they'll try to cut that out too. Step number three. A seed needs to grow with what? With water. A seed will never grow no matter how good the environment is. What is this seed again? The tree of Bani Umayyah, brothers and sisters. This seed, if it wants to grow, water is needed. Where did that first ounce of strength was given to this seed so that it can start moving a little bit? What was the water that was given to it? When was the first time that Bani Umayyah actually was given some power? That's when Yazid bin Abi Sufyan and his brother Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan were sent to conquer Sham, and they did conquer Sham, and now the Khalifa gives them power. They are the rulers of Sham. Limited power, of course, but power nonetheless. Bani Umayyah is now established somewhere. through Muawiyah. His father, Abu Sufyan, was a nobody. He couldn't do anything. They were forced to become Muslim. The Prophet said, listen, you're the worst of the worst. And of course, he didn't say that. I'm saying it. You're the worst of the worst. Go, you're free. It's okay. I am a prophet of mercy. I'll let you go. اذهبوا فأنتم الطلقاء. Go, you are the freed ones. And I said this before, that in Yazid's gathering, where he had brought everyone to see Lady Zainab and everyone else in Sham, Lady Zainab said, what do you say, يَبْنَ الطلقاء? Don't forget that you were a nobody. My grandfather let you live, and your ancestors live. This power is given, this water is given to this seed so that it can start moving, start coming to life for the first time. It was killed when the Prophet came and took over Mecca. The tulaqa were nobodies. No power whatsoever, zero. No, they're given it now. They're given this power, but limited. But now this seed wants to break out of its shell. It wants to start growing. The water has been given to it. This power wants to grow more. Bani Umayyah, it's not enough. What happens, brothers and sisters? Umar ibn al-Khattab is on his deathbed. He summons six of the grandest companions of Rasulullah. He brings them in, he looks at them. He says to them, and he has a frown on his face. He says, I know all of you. You want to rule after me. But I'm going to put together a six-person council so that you choose amongst yourselves a khalifa for the Muslimin. What happens in this six-person council? Ali ibn Abi Talib, when he heard about this, and Nahjul Balagha has spoken about this, how Amir al-Mu'mineen was upset that he was even brought to par with these people. These people were brought to par, up to par with him, the other five that were in this council. Yes, they were great sahabis, but who gets even close to Amir al-Mu'mineen? We're not even going to say he's ma'sum. Let's just look at his report card. From his youth, he has been putting his life on the line. How much iman does that need for someone to work this hard for Islam and for the Prophet's cause? Anyway, he complains about this in Nahjul Balagha. I'm skipping a lot of things that we talked about before. He says, how the first one and the second one, the second Khalifa, they weren't even close to me. Let alone these six, these five that were put next to me? Okay, fine. What happens? These six have to choose someone amongst themselves. Out of six, three moved aside to the favor of the other three. Three are left. Three candidates are left. Abdul Rahman bin Auf, one of the wealthiest Sahabis. Uthman is left and Ali ibn Abi Talib is left. These three are left. They say Abdul Rahman knows that he won't be able to stand up against Uthman or Ali. So he says, I'm going to go aside in favor of one of you. Ya Ali, do you promise to rule by the book of Allah, by the sunnah of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi? And by the sunnah of the shaykhain, Abu Bakr and Umar, do you promise? Ali ibn Abi Talib, he said, no. Only Kitabullah wa Sunnatu Rasulih. Only those two. We broke this down and said that if the Sunnah of the Shaykhain is something the same as the Sunnah of the Prophet and the Kitabullah, then why even separate it and say you have to promise to follow this as well? If it's different than Sunnatu Rasulillah wa Kitabillah, then who are they? And who is anyone else do we have in the Quran that follow Allah, follow the Prophet, and follow the Shaykhain and whatever they say as well? They're not ma'asum. Who says we have to follow them? Anyway, Ali ibn Abi Talib does not give in to that. And right there, he asks Uthman. Abdul Rahman asks Uthman, do you promise? Yes, I promise. Give me your hand. Bay'ah is given. This is one of the tragedies of Islam. Uthman was not fit for Khilafah. At least Abu Bakr, well, we don't know about Abu Bakr because he died soon, after 2 years and some months. But Umar was firm and strict. But when Uthman comes, he's too soft. Way too soft. And even our ulama from our brothers of Ahlul Sunnah, they say this too. They say that yes, well, some of them, not all of them, but some of them, they say yes, Uthman, he was soft. He was weak compared to Umar. And that's why the people liked him more than Umar. Okay, that's not what we want to get into now. Uthman comes to power, brothers and sisters, this is one of the tragedies of Islam according to the Shia. Because when Uthman comes to power and he's weak and they assassinate him, bad stuff happens. That's why our ulama call this 6-person council that I stressed on so much previous nights, that I want our youth to remember these things and know these things. And not just know the Battle of Khaybar, which was one of the medals of honor of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, but also these tragedies of Amir al-Mu'mineen. This 6-person council was one of the tragedies of Islam and Amir al-Mu'mineen. That's why they call it the second Saqifa. Our ulama call it the second Saqifa. Why? Because in the first Saqifa, Khilafah was taken away. Authority and power was taken away from its rightful owner. Fine. It's in the hands of others. At least they are keeping Islam, you know, intact. But now with Uthman coming to power, Uthman is Bani Umayyah. And this is given, not only taken away from the rightful owner, but it is put in the hands of that tribe that it was never supposed to end up in. The Prophet, there's a hadith that hukum is haram on Bani Sufyan. This is where the tragedy begins. That's step number four. This 6-person council. Step number five is that seed that now has cracked and now you know it's alive. It wants to grow under the ground still. You enhance it. You give it power. You give it fertilizer. So now it starts growing strongly and efficiently and quickly. What's that fertilizer? Uthman messes up. To the point that the people it reaches their threshold. They can't take it anymore and they revolt. And eventually, although Ali ibn Abi Talib did not want this to happen, because when the Khalifa of the Muslimin, Khalifa means what? The one who sits in the place of someone else. That means it's as if the Prophet, this is happening to the Prophet. Yes, of course Uthman is nowhere close to the Prophet. But he is sitting in the same position of the Prophet as if when the ruler, the central government of the Muslim Ummah is compromised and weakened like this, it's not good for the Muslim Ummah. Ali ibn Abi Talib does not want this to happen. He goes to Uthman. He tells him, you're doing wrong. Wake up. The people are coming. They want your head. They've sent me as an in-between person. I'm letting you know. Uthman, he listens. Ali ibn Abi Talib gets a signature from him. There's a treaty that's signed. These people who had come from all over the Muslim world, they start going back to their homes. Uthman says something and messes up again. They say, let him go. It's all right, fine, whatever. They go back, but here is where some skill of Bani Umayyah comes into play. Till here, brothers and sisters, how much skill did we have from Bani Umayyah? It was all luck. It was all the Muslim Ummah messing up. Not Bani Umayyah, nothing. Some people ask, why didn't the Prophet kill Bani Abu Sufyan if he knew all of this trouble would happen in the future? The problem was the Muslim Ummah. They should have never given room for these people to breathe after the Prophet. How much luck do we have? How much skill do we have right now? Well, the seed when it was planted, did Bani Umayyah do anything? No. Luck. They got lucky. When Muawiyah comes to power, luck. When they prohibit hadith, did Bani Umayyah prohibit hadith? Who is Bani Umayyah to prohibit hadith? Get lost. No. Others prohibited writing hadith down. It's all luck. Bani Umayyah is not doing anything. 6-person council, luck. Umar ibn al-Khattab puts together 6 people. Bani Umayyah, we don't see any trace of Bani Umayyah except in Uthman. Umar is not Bani Umayyah. What happens after that? The assassination of Uthman, also Uthman messed up. The people came, they revolted. Luck, luck, it's all luck till here. But now Muawiyah capitalizes on this situation. Uthman is being killed. Okay, it looks like a dead Uthman is to the benefit of us more than a living Uthman. Oh, look at that. First, they put me into a little bit of power. Then they gave Khilafah to Bani Umayyah. And my father Abu Sufyan told us in that meeting before he died that they have given you Khilafah. Keep this Khilafah in Bani Umayyah. Pass it around to each other like a ball. That's all. Do not let this ball go out of your court. Abu Sufyan. Muawiyah sees we were able to come this far. And now Bani Umayyah is Khilafah. I mean, that's as good as it gets. But oh my God, it can get even better. How? If Uthman dies, there's a chance for Bani Sufyan to take over again. It's all a power struggle. When Muawiyah took over after Imam al-Hasan, they say, he told the people, he said, I didn't take over so that I can make sure you do your hajj and you do your salat and you fast and all of that. No, no, no. You're going to do that anyway. I took over because I want to rule. I want the power itself. That's all that mattered. Abu Sufyan, what happened with him? Abu Sufyan, when he found out that yes, Bani Umayyah has become Khalifa now, Uthman is Khalifa, he said, take me to the grave of Hamza Sayyidu Shuhada. And another salawat, please, if we can move to the front. Okay, while you're moving forward, there's announcements, inshallah. Yes? Or later. Yes. So before we get the announcements, let me just get some closure here. Take me to the grave of Hamza Sayyidu Shuhada. Why? He goes there and he starts speaking to Hamza Sayyidu Shuhada. He says, Hamza, remember how we were fighting in Badr and Uhud? He's speaking to the grave of Hamza. That we pray that Allah rids the Muslim Ummah of the filth that's ruling these graves right now and has power over these graves. We went this year to the grave of Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada in ruins. You just see a stone and some pigeons that come. That's it. Nothing. There's nothing there. You don't know whether to hurt yourself, hit yourself, hit someone else, do something. You want to go crazy. This is Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada. You know that Fatima al-Zahra would come here and cry for her uncle. Anyway, he kicks the grave of Hamza. He says, that thing that we were fighting for, which was power. Look at the understanding of this person after 90 years, Abu Sufyan. He sees everything as just power. That thing that we were fighting over, my children have it now. That's what it was all about. Muawiyah sees that, oh my God, the Muslim Ummah has messed up to the extent that now I have a shot at Khilafah for Bani Sufyan. Not even Bani Umayyah. He can narrow it down even more to only his own lineage, which is through his father Abu Sufyan. Bani Sufyan can even take over. But there still he needs some more luck, brothers and sisters. Inshallah, we'll leave it here. Then... Ahsantum, thank you very much, brothers and sisters. I don't know how to thank all of you for being able to do this in 40 minutes, to be able to raise so much. Alhamdulillah. I didn't think we would get there, but alhamdulillah, we got there. We got very close. Ajrukum inda al-Husayn, inshallah. So we reached the point where Muawiyah sees that he has a shot at the ultimate power, the ultimate Khilafah and authority. It's going to take some more luck for him to get to that point, but apparently he's optimistic. Or maybe he didn't even have plans for that. But then he sees that Uthman is assassinated. And then he also sees Then Ali ibn Abi Talib takes over. Now, all of a sudden, all of the people that were critical of Uthman become his friends and become people who want to avenge his death and assassination. The people, they revolt, they assassinate him. I'm skipping all of the versions of the Sunni brothers, of our Sunni brothers and sisters that I covered over these nights. And that's why it took so long to get here, that we were learning stuff there. I'm just giving us the Shia account now. All of a sudden, people who were against him, for example, Aisha, there's a word called na'thal. She would use this against Uthman. Derogatory term, she would use it against him. This na'thal, what's he say? Talha, Zubair, they all had problems with Uthman. All of a sudden, everyone becomes a sympathizer of Uthman's blood and a person who wants to avenge the blood of Uthman. All of a sudden, the same Aisha that was coming back from Mecca to Medina, who was, everyone knew she had problems with Uthman, all of a sudden she says, no. Now that I have heard that the Khilafah has gone into the hands of Ali ibn Abi Talib after Uthman, don't take me back to Medina. She was coming back to Medina from Mecca. Take me back to Mecca. And she sits next to the Kaaba and she erects a tent there. And she says, I can't believe Uthman was killed innocently. And who was involved? Ali ibn Abi Talib was involved. So, brothers and sisters, I want you to pay attention here. The Muslim Ummah messed up again, according to us. That's why Muawiyah felt like he could do something here. Just because Uthman was assassinated doesn't necessarily mean that Muawiyah feels like, okay, I can take over now. No. A little bit of luck has to be there again. What's that luck? The Battle of Jamal. Uthman was assassinated. Yes, true. But Muawiyah, who are you to do anything about this? The first Islamic civil war has to take place by Talha, Zubair, Aisha, these greats of the Muslim Ummah. This has to take place so that next time Muawiyah can start a civil war. They start this civil war, Jamal takes place, all of the bad things that happen in Jamal, all the pure blood that is spilled in Jamal, youth are killed. The stories are all there. We move to Siffin now. Muawiyah sees that, okay, Jamal broke the ice. No one would ever dare stand in front of the Khalifa of Muslimin. But now, looks like if you have an excuse, you can stand. The excuse, what is it? It's the shirt of Uthman that's all bloody, that I've been hanging in Sham for the past year, telling the Shamites that Ali ibn Abi Talib killed Uthman. And a good reason for that is what? Ali ibn Abi Talib is now Khalifa. He took over, right? Of course he was involved, they will tell you. He tells the people. And it's okay to fight other Sahabis. Why? Because in the Battle of Jamal it took place. So we can tell now that it's okay. But still, Muawiyah needs a good excuse. And that's where he comes up with, I am the cousin of Uthman. We're both Bani Umayyah. I am asking for the killers of Uthman. O Ali ibn Abi Talib. Because Ali comes to, well, he doesn't come to Muawiyah. But he sends for Muawiyah, give me your bay'ah. I have become Khalifa now. I am a rightfully chosen Khalifa, and as a matter of fact, consensually chosen, unanimously. Everyone agrees that I'm Khalifa. Give me your bay'ah. Muawiyah says, no, Ali, I love you so much, and I have so much respect for you. I just want to make sure that, you know, the blood of Uthman doesn't go in vain, and it is avenged. Give me the killer so that I can give bay'ah to you sooner. Muawiyah was so smart. He would have made a great actor. He makes the Muslim world feel like there's nothing wrong between me and Ali. I just need to have these killers. Ali, give me these killers. Ali says, who are you to even say anything? If I want, I'll take care of the killers. If I don't want, I'm the Khalifa of Muslimin. No. In Jamal, we learned that you can stand up against the Khalifa of your time. We learned that in Jamal. Brothers and sisters, you see how it's all connected, for God's sake. It's all connected. It's not Yazid was bad guy, Imam Hussein was good guy. Our youth have to understand this. It's all connected. You see that Siffin caused so many problems. You want to put your finger on Siffin, you say, no, it's connected to Jamal. You want to put your finger on Jamal, it's connected to Uthman. Uthman, where did he come from? 6-person count, it goes all the way back. to square one over there in Saqifa. You see how this thread is connecting all of these? Siffin, one of the greatest tragedies of the Muslim Ummah, Siffin. Some reports say up to 150,000 are killed in Siffin. Why? Because Uthman's blood was spilled. Yani Muawiyah, you say that Uthman is so important that 70 to 150,000 people have to be killed for it? Yes. We don't understand this. I can't understand this. Well, many seem to understand the justification for this. What's your justification? Justification is that Muawiyah was a Sahabi. And Ali ibn Abi Talib was Sahabi. They both did their own ijtihad. One was right, one was wrong. But they're both rewarded for their ijtihad. Yeah, really? 100,000 are killed and someone is still rewarded for causing all of that because he did his ijtihad? Well, I have my own ijtihad. You're not a Sahabi. Only Sahabi has this right to do his own ijtihad and mess up. And not a normal Sahabi, not a good Sahabi, not one of those first degree ones. No, but a Sahabi that became Muslim by force, Muawiyah. And he was only a Sahabi for 2 or 3 years. And this is where we keep discussing this concept of the righteousness of the Sahaba and companions of the Prophet. Is it a concept that we can understand, that we can digest, that just because you saw the Prophet for a year, 2 years, just because you were 10 years old and you saw the Prophet, you're a Sahabi now? That means no one can question what you do. And if you messed up, you are still rewarded, but just one reward, because you were wrong. If you had made the right decision, you would have been rewarded twice. All of this story and this can of worms opens up here. But Siffin is not the tragedy, brothers and sisters. I said this, I think, last night or 2 nights ago. Siffin was actually a blessing, apparently. You know why? Because Ali ibn Abi Talib gets the chance to just destroy Bani Umayyah altogether. Altogether. And he got this close to getting rid of this nuisance. But what happens? Once again, luck comes into play. And the Muslim Ummah messes up again. More luck for Muawiyah. They're this close to destroying Muawiyah. They're this close to his tent and his camp where he's staying. The Muslims themselves, the companions of Ali ibn Abi Talib, they say, stop the war. Stop the war. Don't you see that they have Qur'ans on the spears? We explained all of these things before. They have Qur'ans. They're saying, we're Muslim too. Let's go by the Qur'an. Let this Qur'an be the judge between us. Really? After 100,000 are killed, 70,000 are killed, now it comes to your mind? Let's let the Qur'an decide for us? Anyway, the companions of Amir al-Mu'mineen mess up. And they say, Ali, you have to stop fighting. We're this close to winning. Either you die or you have to spare Muawiyah's life. And that's why Ali has no option but to say, stop the war. Stop the battle. Muawiyah survives. He barely makes it. Here, Muawiyah was thinking, wow, the luck I had here, nowhere else I ever had. Because I was this close to losing my life. But the Muslim Ummah messed up. So the tragedy isn't Siffin. Siffin, in a way, of course, might have been good because Ali could have finished the job, alayhi salam. But what happens, this is the tragedy. This is step number 6. Siffin is not step number 6. Step number 6 is the arbitration, the tahkim, hakamiyya, different names they use for this concept. What happens? Now that we have stopped the battle, we're going to choose a representative from us. Muawiyah chooses a representative for himself. They have to get together, decide what the Quran says regarding this fight and this battle. And whatever they say goes and holds. And so they do that. Muawiyah, he gets to make his own decision on his rep, who represents him. But the same people who forced Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam to stop the battle, they're the ones who also impose on him to do what? To choose Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. This is the tragedy, brothers and sisters. He wants to put Malik as his representative, Malik al-Ashtar. No, no, no. Malik al-Ashtar just wants to fight. We're not going to allow him. Ibn Abbas at least. No, Ibn Abbas, no. We choose Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. So they impose two things on the Imam here. This, brothers and sisters, is a tragedy in Islam. The arbitration is a tragedy. Brothers and sisters, tahkim had not happened, Ashura probably wouldn't have happened. So it's the tahkim's fault. We want to put our hand on it? No. Tahkim is connected to what? Safin, which is connected to Jamal, which is connected to Uthman, which is connected to six-person council. It goes all the way up. I'm going to keep saying this. Understanding. So that when I weep for Imam Hussein, I see this whole series of events over 50 years that the Muslim Ummah started here and slowly made its way down over 50 years to the bottomest of the pits of misguidance and darkness. Step number 6, arbitration. What happens in this arbitration? Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, he gets together with Amr bin al-As, the representative of Muawiyah. They get together and they discuss and they come to the conclusion that, you know what? We believe that both Muawiyah and Ali have to give up all their power. Muawiyah in Sham, Ali ibn Abi Talib in Medina and Kufa, he has to give up all of his authority too. A third party, a third person has to be chosen for Khalifa. But what happens is Abu Musa is fooled, makes a mistake. He goes up on the minbar to make this announcement. He's the first one to go. Amr bin al-As, the same one who had said, "O Muawiyah, put the Qur'ans on the spears so that we can fool these people." And they were fooled. He stays behind. He says, "I'll go after you, Abu Musa." Abu Musa goes up on the minbar. He announces that, "I am taking Khilafah away from Ali ibn Abi Talib. Now Amr, your turn. Take away the power of Muawiyah." He comes up, he says, "That Khilafah that Abu Musa took away from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib, I take and I put into the hands of Muawiyah. Muawiyah is now Amir al-Mu'mineen." Muawiyah could not wish for better. Ali ibn Abi Talib says, What kind of judgment is this? Is this judgment by the Quran? Can't accept this. I'm not allowed to accept this. A Khalifa of the Muslimin is stripped of his authority? Just like that? How come we couldn't do that to Abu Bakr? To Umar, Uthman, we couldn't do it to them. How come to me? We can do it to me. I can't do that. He puts together another army. Now this is over like a year's time. To go and fight Muawiyah again. But the problem is this. This arbitration that took place because of those people who had no insight. Were young and full of emotion, some of them. But no insight. No knowledge. Would recite the Quran very nicely, but no knowledge of the Quran, no understanding of the Quran, no putting the Quranic verses together. The same thing that we see today in ISIS. What happens is, they say, "Ya Ali, how dare you? How dare I what? How dare you put someone to choose what the Quran says? You chose people to make judgments? Abu Musa and Amr al-As? People don't make judgments. People don't have hukum and right to give a hukum. Well then who has right to give hukum? To have a judgment?" They say, "La hukm illa lillah." Only Allah. The Quran says, "Inil hukm illa lillah." Only Allah. So what is Ali supposed to do? Bring a Quran and put it there so the Quran speaks? What are you talking about? They say, no. Either take back everything, no arbitration. Ali says, "It's too late now. What are you talking about? You're the ones who forced me. Once you sign, you have to live up to it." They say, "No, take it back. I can't take it back. You're kafir." Na'udhu billah. Ali ibn Talib, you're kafir. They break off from the army of Ali. They break off from that community. And they start creating problems. First, it's ideological. Then they start assassinating people. Then they become a threat to the Muslim Ummah. Then Ali alayhi salam sees no option but to take care of business with them. So he attacks and the Battle of Nahrawan takes place. Battle of Nahrawan is the fault of the Battle of Siffin and the arbitration, which is the fault of Jamal, which is the fault of... And we go on and on, back again. Ali ibn Abi Talib has to spend energy to get rid of these people. Only a few of them are left. And these few Khawarij, they are called, are the ones who eventually, because of that grudge, because of that takfirism that they have for Ali ibn Abi Talib, and Muawiyah of course, and Amr al-As, What do? They try to assassinate all, but unfortunately only Ali ibn Abi Talib is the one to be assassinated. Muawiyah is only injured. Another luck that Muawiyah had. Now, this seed that was growing, that we gave it water, it broke out of its seed. It's making its way up and bumped its head against a rock by the name of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This rock is removed. Step 6, the arbitration. Removed Ali from that and made Muawiyah Amir al-Mu'mineen in a sense, and not even to make things better for Muawiyah, it caused the Khawarij to go against Ali ibn Abi Talib and eventually assassinate Ali ibn Abi Talib. Step 6, arbitration. And Imam Ali being removed. This rock, it was in the way of this seed to come out of the ground. This seed comes out of the ground now. Bani Umayyah, led by Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan, without any competition, no one could contest him. Yeah, there is someone by the name of Hassan ibn Ali, but he's nothing for Muawiyah anymore. Muawiyah has the upper hand now. That's why Hassan ibn Ali alayhi salam has no choice but to sign a ceasefire and peace treaty with Muawiyah. Why? Because if he doesn't, he's going to die. Hussein ibn Ali is going to die. Abbas will be killed. Everyone will be killed. All the good Shia will be killed. And what will Muawiyah do? He will make it look like it was an accident. He will say, we did ijtihad, they did ijtihad, and we're wrong or right, we're rewarded anyway. He's a Sahabi. He can do what he wants. Not only can he do what he wants, he can cover it up easily. But Imam Hassan has no choice. That's step number 7. Step number 7 is this seed actually, no competition. The ceasefire, Muawiyah becomes ruler. All authority is given to Muawiyah. Muawiyah now has 20 years. Allah gave him a long life. He has 20 years to do whatever he wants. 10 years in Imam Hassan's time, 10 years in Imam Hussein's time. He's very friendly to Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein. Sends them gifts monthly, annually. They're not a threat. The tree of Bani Umayyah, in 20 years, does a tree grow or not? If you plant the seed correctly, take care of the soil correctly, water it correctly, all of these things, 20 years, is that not enough for a tree to become strong and well-rooted? Yes. And that is exactly how the tree of Bani Umayyah reached that climax and strength. But Muawiyah is not going to live forever. If Muawiyah had lived forever, brothers and sisters, Islam would have been over. Finished. That's when he dies and Imam Hussein sees now is the chance. This tree that grew so strong, we still have people like Marwan, we still have people like Yazid, we have people like that. And the ones that come after them, they're going to still destroy Islam. Islam is going to be destroyed because of this tree. But now, the last pawn of this game, which is Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Muawiyah is gone. Imam Hassan is gone. Imam Ali is gone. Fatimah al-Zahra gave her life way in the beginning. There is one more hope left, and that's Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. If Imam Hussein doesn't do what he has to do now, there is no hope anymore. Imam Sajjad, no one cares about Imam Sajjad. These Muslims, he's a good tabi'i, he's not a sahabi. He's not the son of the daughter of Rasulullah. He doesn't have those honors that Imam al-Hassan, Imam Hussein had. Imam Hussein sees the only thing that can take down this tree after 20 years is his blood. The only thing. In other words, brothers and sisters, it didn't matter. So it seems. It didn't matter if Yazid would have sent a letter to Medina and tell the governor of Medina that make sure you get bay'ah for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Doesn't seem like that was necessary for Imam Hussein to do what he did. Even during Muawiyah's time, they report that he wrote letters to Muawiyah, Hussein alayhi salam, telling Muawiyah, I see no reason, after my brother Hassan has become martyred, I see no reason not to fight you. The only reason I'm not fighting you is because my brother had a treaty with you. And in that treaty, as long as you're alive, power is with you. But after you die, it has to come to me. In other words, Muawiyah, if you die and power does not come to me, I'll do something about it. But right when Muawiyah dies, Yazid sends the letter. And this makes it even better for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. This makes it better for Imam Hussein because he's the one who initiated. Although it seems that Imam Hussein would have stood up anyway. This tree has to be cut down somehow. And that's where Imam Hussein begins the journey that is still going on till today, and you and I are sitting here. It had a very, very high price that he had to pay. There was no other way. But this is the last shot at keeping Islam alive. And history brings us till today. Brothers and sisters, yes, Imam Hussein was the only one who was able to take down this tree. Forever. Because it didn't last very long. After that, 67 years, Bani Umayyah tried their best. They were in power, but it was gone. The Abbasids, which were great enemies of Ahlul Bayt, they came to power for 500-600 years. But they never were like Bani Umayyah to try to wipe out Islam anymore. Muawiyah, if you had lived forever, you might have probably won. Allah even gave you a long life, but Allah had someone, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. But it didn't come for free, brothers and sisters. Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. There was a price that had to be paid. And out of all of the blood that was shed on Ashura, if you can turn off the lights, please. Out of all of the blood that was shed on Ashura, there is a blood that's a little different. Damul Madhloom, the blood of the Madhloom. All of the blood that is shed in Ashura is Madhloom, but this is next level Madhloomiyya. The blood of Ali al-Asghar is a pure blood that you could say maybe overtakes all the other blood that was shed on Ashura. They say that the little hands of Ali al-Asghar, ulama say this. These little hands, brothers and sisters, untie great knots. Ulama, when they would get stuck, they would go to Ali al-Asghar. Inshallah, tonight we get whatever we need. Of course, we're not mourning so that in the end of our mourning, we ask Allah to give us something. We're mourning because we want to mourn, finished. That's why we mourn. They are so kind that they will give us, inshallah. But we're going to try our best to get what we need tonight from these little hands of Ali al-Asghar, because tomorrow is the day of Hussein. Tomorrow, oh Hussein, I don't think I'm going to have time to ask you for things. Hussein, if I needed something, I got it from Abbas last night, inshallah. The tears that I shed for Abul Fadl Abbas, inshallah, the tears that I shed today. But everyone is saying, please, forget about us. Remember Hussein. These little hands can do wonders. Brothers and sisters, let's go to Karbala. I want to get permission from our mother Fatima as we move into Karbala. Brothers and sisters, Fatima al-Zahra also had a 6-month-old. Wouldn't it have been good if we had another warrior in Karbala so that the 6-month-old of Karbala was not killed? A 25, 30-year-old maybe. A 35, 45-year-old maybe, excuse me, by the name of Muhsin. He would have been around that age right now. If Muhsin had not been killed when they struck our mother, and she miscarried Muhsin, Muhsin would have been alive today. You can be sure that he would have been one of the warriors of Karbala. But there's something about killing infants that they killed Muhsin. Now Ali ibn al-Asghar is alone. A time came in Ashura. Hussein ibn Ali sees that everyone's gone. He comes back from Abul Fadl Abbas's body. He pulls the tent. The tent falls of Abbas, letting everyone know that Abbas is gone. Don't ask me about Abbas anymore. There is no water sack, children. There is no Abbas anymore. Lady Zainab, get yourself ready. Get yourself ready for the non-mahrams. There's no one to protect you anymore. As he wants to go out, هَلْ مِنْ نَاصِرٍ يَنْصُرُنِي. Is there anyone to help me? هَلْ مِنْ ذَابٍ يَذُبُّ عَنْ حَرَمِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. No, there is no one to take care of Haram Rasulullah. Abbas is gone. Ya Hussein. But there is one more soldier left in the cradle. There was one soldier in Medina. They took his life. There's another soldier in Karbala. He says, I can't do anything, father, but take me with you. The reports say that Imam Hussein hears the baby crying. He says, bring my nursing son, Abdullah al-Radi'. They bring him to him. He takes a look at this child. This child is dying anyway. Maybe the army of Umar ibn Sa'd will have some mercy. That's why he takes Ali with him. All of a sudden, the army of the enemy sees Hussein is coming. But he doesn't look like he wants to fight. There's probably no one after Hussein because we killed Abbas. You can be sure Abbas is the last one that was standing. Hussein is coming, but he doesn't look like he wants to fight. What is he holding? Is that the turban of Rasulullah on his head? The cloak of Rasulullah? It's as if Hussein is walking humbly. It's as if that Hussein wants to do the rain prayer, as if. He brings Ali in al-Asghar. What does he want to say? All of a sudden they see that a baby is taken up to the sky. I don't know if Hussein was showing this baby to the army or if he's showing Allah, oh Allah, if you want to take my Asghar, take him. Ya Allah, you are my everything. Take my Asghar. It's okay. This pure blood, he calls out to the enemy. إِن لَمْ تَرْحَمُونِي فَارْحَمُوا هَذَا الطِّفْلَ الرَّضِيعِ. If you're not gonna have mercy on me, then have mercy on this child. أَمَا تَرَوْنَهُ كيف يتلظى عطشا. Do you not see that my Asghar is dying in my arms? Do you not see his mouth opening and closing like a fish out of water? Just a drop of water for my Asghar. My beautiful Asghar is dying of thirst. His mother is waiting. The reports say before Hussein could finish what he was saying, a three-pronged arrow comes from Harmala. فَذَبَحَهُ مِنَ الْأُذُنِ إِلَى الْأُذُنِ. They slaughtered this baby from ear to ear. As Hussein is addressing the enemy, there is a sensation on his head, the blood of Asghar, the purest blood to ever be spilled on the plains of Karbala. عون علي انما نزل بي بعين الله. Oh Allah, the only thing that makes this easy for me is that you are watching. Are you ready, brothers and sisters? Some say, Ya Sahib al-Zaman, some say that the head of this baby was hanging from its skin. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله. I am not gonna tell the mothers of this majlis to imagine their infants in such a situation. Hussein has to come back to the tents, but in such a state, he buries Ali and Al-Asghar with his sword. لا أضحك الله سن الدهر إن ضحكت. They say when Sakina went to the body of Hussein, she narrates a few lines that she heard from the headless body of her father. شيعتي مهما شربتم ما عذب فاذكروني أو سمعتم بشهيد أو غريب فاندبوني. Oh my Shia, when you drink water, remember me. If you ever hear of a stranger, an gharib, or a shaheed, remember me. ليتكم في يوم عاشوراء جميعا تنظروني. كيف أستسقي لطفلي فأباه أن يرحموني. I wish you were there on Ashura watching me as I called out to the army of the enemy asking for water for my son. فأبوا أن يرحموني فأبوا أن يرحموني فأبوا أن يرحموني. They denied my son Ali water. لا أضحك الله سن الدهر إن ضحكت وآل محمد مظلومون قد قهروا. نسألك اللهم وندعوك باسمك العظيم الأعظم العز الأجل الأكرم بفاطمة وأبيها وبعلها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها وبدم المظلوم. يا الله 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 يا رحمن يا رحيم يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلوبنا على دينك يا حسين.
I mean, we'll start the program in just 5 minutes. Yeah, I'll request all the brothers to settle down. I mean, outside it's already raining, so there's no point going outside.